We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 363 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Back with me this week, tanned, rested, and ready for another round of Red Leg Nation Radio, it's Bill Lack. How are you, Bill?
I'm great. Back off suspension.
Yeah, off suspension.
Chad suspended me for being too smart. That had never happened.
Yeah, we're gonna ask the HR department if that was the reason.
There is no truth to the rumor that I've been you know, at a black site trying out for shortstop for the Cincinnati Reds.
They don't need a shortstop. They've already convinced us of that. So that's... Now, I will say this before we get started. I understand that you have a bone to pick with me.
Yeah, I was listening to last week's podcast today, and I've been misquoted. When you were talking to Chris about, we've got a question and about Garcia later, and we could do this later, but since you brought it up, you said I was the low man on Garcia, and you said, I don't see anything in his history to make me believe that he's going to be a legitimate big league player.
Jose Garcia you're talking about.
Yes, and I have never said that.
Well, how did you put it then? How did I misquote you?
What I said was, I don't understand what everybody is so excited about and counting on a kid that hasn't done anything above high A. I hope he is. And even you have said this before, that you don't count on anything until they do something above A ball.
Yeah, I say I don't ever mind trading anybody based on what they've done below double A. Yeah.
I mean, I hope you're right. I hope his 2019 that he had for the Tortugas is the player he's going to become. But as I always say, I'm like the guy from Missouri. He's going to have to show me, and he didn't show me anything last year.
Those are difficult circumstances.
I'm not blaming him. I'm not blaming the kid at all. He got thrown into deep water over his head and didn't know how to swim.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll accept your reprimand there. You know, with Garcia, when we talk about who's high on him and who's low on him, you know, I think the 60th percentile, if he's successful, is he's probably just gonna be an average major league shortstop. Which there's nothing wrong with that. I would give anything to have an average major league shortstop right now.
I agree. But what concerns me is all of the quote unquote experts are saying all he needs is a little more seasoning and he's going to be the guy. And I don't see any reason to believe for sure at this point that he's going to be the guy.
Well,
now, the people that are saying that, they know a lot more about this game than I do. But, you know, we've had guys that looked great at A-ball and before and they came up. We've had guys that looked great at Triple-A and didn't do it and couldn't do the job at the big league level. So what concerns me, I guess, is what I'm saying is I'm trying to temper the Reds' enthusiasm for this kid. And I hope they're right, and I hope he's the player they think he is. But I hope they're not, you know, I hope there's some other eggs in the basket. And I don't think Rodriguez kid is ever going to hit either.
And no.
So I don't know where we go if it's not either one of them.
Well, I don't know that there's anyone saying that Jose Garcia is going to be an all-star. I don't think – I mean, yeah, he could. I mean, who knows?
No. I'm not even saying that. I'm not convinced he's going to be a major league average player, but the Reds seem convinced that he is. Like, he's playing A, B, and C, and that concerns me.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're talking about what the Reds' plans are, they've completely screwed up the shortstop position in the organization. That's just a fact. I look at Garcia, and I see a guy that can already play defensively the position at the big league level and has hit in the minor leagues. And so that's a guy that, okay, you can kind of project that, you know, he's got a shot anyway. But, oh, no, you're absolutely correct that if he doesn't pan out, and there is a chance he does not pan out, and it's not a, you know, 1% or 2% chance. I mean, it's enough to talk about. I think he is going to pan out to the extent that I think he's going to be a legit big league shortstop. But if, you know, is he going to be an above average shortstop? I'm not willing to say that. And if he doesn't, there's nobody in this organization. There are no shortstops. He's really the only shortstop in this organization.
And I guess where I'm differing from you is I am not yet convinced that he's going to be a major league average shortstop. Will he play in the major leagues? Absolutely, because the Reds will not let him fail to that extent.
Well, I'm not convinced either. he doesn't need to be in the league this year. He needs to go down and prove it to us.
Well, and here's what I'll say. Let's use what you're saying. Major league, an average major league shortstop is the base. Is what our goal is for this kid. I am 30%, 25 to 30% sure right now that he'll hit that level. Where would you say you are?
Same.
Okay. So we're arguing semantics here, really not what we believe. Now, let's say he has another year comparable to what he had in 2019 in Daytona. This year, I'm assuming he'll be at the AA level for most of the year. If he's playing well, he'll probably get to Louisville. Now, if he has another year like 2019, I'm gonna be sitting up and taking notice.
Yeah, but let's define, and we've gotten off on Jose Garcia, and I didn't expect it to. And this is a good conversation. I'm enjoying it. When we're talking about an average big league shortstop, you know what you're saying, really? He's one of the 15 best shortstops in the world. You know, I can't. That's why I have my percentage is so low. That's tough to ask of a kid, but can he be a legit big league shortstop? I think there's a 70% chance he's a legit big league shortstop. He may be below average somewhat.
Well, I guess how are you going to define that then?
A starting shortstop in the big leagues.
Well, then Kyle Farmer may be that this year.
Touche.
If you're going to use that definition.
A legitimate starting shortstop. You can't count the Reds this year because they refuse to employ shortstops for some reason. It's the weirdest professional franchise I've ever seen.
But, you know, see, there have been times where guys have played a position for this team. We've had years where we didn't have a legitimate major league catcher. They were just so awful, but they were the best that we had.
Yeah, when was that? I don't remember that.
Who's the guy? Alex Trevino.
Oh, well, yeah, there were some years there. Dan Bilardello.
Dan Bilardello.
Dave Van Gorder.
Dave Van Gorder. When Benito Santiago had some really bad years here.
Did he? Because I looked at his stats.
His 2000 year here was pretty bad.
His 95 was okay. You're right. His 2000, I'm looking at it right now. Actually, yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
But you know, I guess... Again, I think we're arguing we're arguing words and not really. We would have to come to a decision on what exactly is a legitimate. I don't think just because you get 81 starts in the big leagues at shortstop makes you a legitimate major league starting shortstop.
No, but he's a guy that I think
that could be like being the best ballet dancer in Kansas. If you're the only ballet dancer in Kansas, you're the best ballet dancer in Kansas.
I was the best ballet dancer in Kansas officially, 1996 through 1998. I have the sashes to prove it.
Pictures of you in that tutu. That's how I get on here every few weeks.
Glorious, glorious. Send them out. I was gorgeous back then.
The legs on that boy.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. We had a lot of time to discuss, and you're right. We do have a question later. We'll dive maybe a little bit more into Jose Garcia because there are a lot of questions, and if I misquoted you. We've clarified that, I hope, but I don't know. I'm optimistic because I'm trying to be optimistic because he has actually hit in the minor leagues, and we know he can play it defensively. So it's been a while since the Reds have had a guy in the organization that you could say that about. You know, who's the last shortstop to come up through the organization who you could say, oh, I can see this kid developing? Probably Barry Larkin.
Larkin.
So, you know, I'm hopeful.
At the same time.
That's true. All right. So the news of the week, let's jump into it. First of all, today, Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio announced that 30% capacity would be allowed at outdoor events for the 2021 season, maybe more later, but at least at the start of the season. So the Reds will be permitted to have up to 30% of capacity.
Put some more, about 13 grand?
Yeah, about their average attendance.
Yeah. So how many times do you think they're going to have to turn people away?
Opening day?
Yeah.
Occasionally here and there, depending on
some nice Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, when the Cubs are in town.
Yeah. Boy, you think it was blue down there before.
Oh, gosh. Can you imagine?
The only reason we'll see are the seats.
Only thing I hope is that they give at least one seat at every game to the woo guy. Got to get that guy in the park, right?
Oh, God. Now you're just trying to aggravate me. The only woo guy that there should be around is Ric Flair.
Masks mandatory for all fans and employees unless eating or drinking. Socially distanced pod style seating, so it's up to six people.
Okay, and let me ask you a question. Since you're not going to have to wear a mask while you're eating or drinking, are we going to have a bigger problem with alcohol in the stadium?
It's an excuse to not wear a mask.
There you go.
Give me another beer.
Because I can tell you on when I've been flying through this, I keep a bottle of water with me so that I can pull the mask down.
There you go. Oh,
just saying.
Tickets issued digitally versus the MLB ballpark app, et cetera. Contactless.
That isn't that big of a change anymore because I think all the season tickets are through that now.
Contactless and cashless forms of payment at concessions and merchandise stands. So, anyway, Bill, let me just ask you the basic question here. Are you excited about the fact that fans can be back in the stadium?
Yeah. I don't see myself going this year, not because of COVID. I just, as you've talked about with Chris and Jason and Doug, I'm not going to put any money in this ownership group's pocket when they're not doing anything to make the team better.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited. I mean, I can't wait to be sitting at a ballpark, you know, with your hot dog or whatever you want to have at the ballpark, but just sitting there and enjoying the weather and the breeze and the game unfolding in front of me. I will absolutely be at baseball games this year, hopefully early and often. None of those games will be at Great American Ballpark. Just, you know, again, I've said it before. I don't need to take my stand again. I'm not I'm not trying to create any kind of a movement here. But, yeah, I can't in good conscience give Bob Castellini any money when he refused to, improve this team.
Have an outing in Louisville.
Yeah, something like that would be fun. I mean, I'm happy to do that. Louisville, Chattanooga. But
Dayton.
And listen, I hate it because, you know, last year's first year that I didn't go to Great American Ballpark in, I don't even remember when. Maybe ever. It might be the first season.
I would bet ever, knowing you.
Yeah, it might be the first season in the history of Great American Ballpark. But that was taken away from me. This year it's going to be by choice. And I just, again, I'm not asking anybody to join me on that. I'm glad that you have, Bill, but do what you want to do, man. If you want to go to Great American Ballpark and get you a beer and enjoy the game, go for it. Do it. Enjoy it. You know, it's baseball. I just, I can't do it in good conscience, but that's all right. Whatever. I'm excited.
I'll say this. I'm saying that now. I'm not going to tell you that I may not weaken some Sunday when the weather's beautiful and somebody calls me up and says, you know, we're not going to use our season tickets today. You know, you want to use them? Because my wife loves going to the ball yard.
Yeah, your principled stand might waver a little bit.
It absolutely could. But I'll go down there and I'll drink beer and protest is what I'll do.
There you go. that's a step closer to where we need to go eventually. So
some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, good deal. Now, the rest of the quote-unquote news, there's really no news out of spring training, and it's always difficult to watch the beat writers try to write things about the spring because there's nothing to talk about. This guy's in the best shape of his life, and this guy said this, and this guy said that. And so we're going to talk about a couple things that some people said, basically, that aren't really news, but it's something for us to talk about. And it was Eugenio Suarez. First of all, is there anybody that does not love Eugenio Suarez?
Even Paul Daugherty was talking about how much he loved Suarez today in his column.
Yeah, I mean, he's as likable as any Red in my lifetime. Love that guy. Here's his quote. "This year, my goal is to break my own record. In 2019, it was 49 homers. I want to break my own record. In 2019, I hit 49. This year, I hope and I believe it. I feel like it's going to be a special year for me. I'm going for 50 home runs. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'll go for 50. Like I said, I worked on my body. I feel so good. I'm going for 50 homers. So, hey, good. I hope he gets 50 homers.
I do, too. It's funny because he did lose a bunch of weight, they said. 20 pounds, I think I read.
I don't remember exactly how much, but I've seen him. He's a handsome young man.
And he quit eating some type of corn cake.
Right.
And quit drinking beer.
Yeah.
So, you know, quit drinking beer. That can be a heck of a sacrifice for some guys, you know.
Yeah. Somebody posted on the Twitters, because I'd forgotten about it, that show Parks and Rec. Chris Pratt's on that show, and he was sort of a chubby type guy, and then he got the role in Guardians of the Galaxy, and the next season he came back on Parks and Rec, and he was in great shape. And they said, "What did you do?" And he said, "Oh, I quit drinking beer. I lost 50 pounds in 1 month." So that was a joke because it was a comedy show, Bill. It was a joke.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, Will. But
I hope he hit. We'll cover Suarez. Suarez will come up in my comments later. I'll put it that way.
Okay. All right. And also the reasons why it might be difficult for him to come up to hit 50 home runs. Those are going to come up as part of our answers to viewer mail. I think so. Okay. Next one was Joey Votto. And Joey Votto had a really interesting interview. And yeah. I can't really cover everything that he said, but essentially he said, you know, for a while, I was trying to do what I thought helped the team, you know, and get on base as much as possible, low strikeouts, you know, lots of walks. And he said, but, you know, I've led the league in slugging percentage too. And I got so dead set in commanding the strike zone, assuming I was going to help the team that way. And then he went on to talk about how he led the league in extra base hits at 18 years old in the minors, you know, and he says, At the core, that's who I am. I try to make myself into the perfect hitter, and I've had some success with that. Not perfect, but copied my idols. I'm probably best suited to include some more air and get back to my natural approach. Try to hit with more power, basically. Get back to what he felt like is his natural swing. So he sounded excited, and listening to Votto talk is always fun for me. He's always an interesting interview. And what do you think about those comments, Bill?
I love me some Joey, but every year at this time of year, Joey tells us how he's changed things and he's going to be back to be the hitter he used to be and be productive and blah, blah, blah. And every year it seems anymore in the first half of the season, he's terrible. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope Joey comes out and he's got, you know, 35 home runs at the All-Star break and hitting 340. But again, you know, and I agree. He's an interesting guy to talk to. He thinks about hitting more than anybody I've ever heard talk about it. But you kind of said this before, what people say at this time of year, they're just talking so the reporters have something to report on.
Yeah. But you did hit into an interesting truth, which is that he does every year talk about, well, here's my goals. And, you know, I want to try to do this and get better at this and get better at that. And then the last, you know, 3-4 years, he has come out of the gates just horribly. And you wonder if it's because he's tinkering, trying to figure it out. And then, of course, you know, most of these years he comes back and ends up being Joey. He's getting to the age where I hope he can just hit for a full season again, because if he can do that, he doesn't have to be great anymore. But if he can just be Joey, he can help this team. So he's one of the guys I'm really interested to watch this year.
What would you – I won't say – expect, but what would you call a good year for Joey Votto at age 37?
110 OPS plus.
So basically last year.
I think so. Yeah. His numbers at the end of the year ended up being, I would take that over a full year.
I mean, so he got on, he hit for some power. He had the 11 home runs. I mean, that gives him, if you prorate that out, that, puts him right around 30. I don't expect him to hit 30 home runs this year, but if we got 110 OPS plus, he got on base at a 340, 350 rate and hit 25 home runs, I'd take that in a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he can do that. I think he can do that.
And you know what? That's nothing to sneeze at age 37.
It's true. It's true. Not many people can do that at any age.
Joey keeps aging, but in my mind, he's still the guy I watched play first base down at Sarasota years and years and years ago. He doesn't look any different.
So what you're saying is that's what you love about Joey Votto. You get older, he stays the same age.
That's right.
Yes, he does. All right, so good luck, Joey Votto, we hope. Other news, quote-unquote, David Bell, he's the Reds manager, and he says that it looks like he's going to start Jose De Leon on opening day. What is this all about? I'm outraged. Jose De Leon on opening day. How stupid is this? Oh, wait, hold on. Spring training's opening day, first spring training game.
I still don't like it.
He's still upset with it, huh? Yeah, who cares? But I was trying to find a reason to get outraged. So
I'll be honest, I don't really care who starts opening day.
Well, yeah, me either. I used to care about that a lot. I really wanted it to be Scott Feldman that year.
I mean, at this point this year, it's going to be one of two guys, and you can make the argument for either one.
And they both started opening days.
Yep, and it would be hard to, it would be hard to be upset no matter what Bell decides, unless, he starts, Lorenzen or somebody, Miley or, opening, and everybody else, assuming everybody else was healthy.
Yeah, knowing David Bell, he'll start Lucas Sims. He'll be the opener that day, let him pitch three innings, and then make it a bullpen day on opening day.
Yeah.
That's the kind of nonsense David
Bell. It's like those old dusty Sunday lineups,
There you go.
Or the David Bell playoff lineups, however you want to look at it.
Featuring starting big league shortstop Kyle Farmer. Thank you very much.
That's right. He's a legitimate starting shortstop in the major leagues, according to Chad's definition.
That's right. Okay, so David Bell, again, current Reds manager.
Current Reds manager. Can we go into that for a second?
About David Bell?
Yeah.
What you be
will
about?
Will David Bell be the Reds manager at the end of the season?
No.
Will he be the Reds manager at the All-Star break?
No.
Will he be the Reds manager on May 1st?
Yes.
Will he be the Reds manager on Memorial Day?
What's that, like December?
No, that's May.
I'm kidding. I don't know. Sometime in May? Yeah. Sometime in May. Even though it's not going to be his fault. He's going to get fired. I'll say it's not going to be his fault. He's not a good manager. I don't know. I hope they start out well, and if they do, he'll hang on to the end of the year.
Do you think who do you think is the heir apparent?
I don't know that there is an heir apparent. I would not be surprised, even though he made it clear that that's not why he took the broadcasting position, but I would not be surprised if, Bell's contract is up at the end of the year. I would not be surprised if Barry Larkin is your field manager beginning next season. And I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but that's just that's me speculating, which I like to do.
Well, that's what we do here.
Yeah. What do you think? You think David Bell survives the season?
No. But I think if they fire him, I think the liner to Shields at least takes over for the rest of this year.
Oh, yeah, probably. Probably, yeah.
But if Barry wanted to be the manager of this team, I would have thought he would have been the manager of this team before now.
Yeah.
Or would have done what most people would say is the work that you need to do to get a major league job. But I'm saying that, and that's not necessarily true anymore because so many guys are jumping in from all over the place into major league jobs, not necessarily always managing, but coaching jobs from outside. And so maybe I'm just thinking old school and you know, maybe there's no big reason why Barry Larkin can't jump into the manager's job from the broadcast booth or from his house in Orlando or whatever.
Yeah, well, what I see is that he is, for the first time, he's kind of made a commitment. First time since he played, made a real commitment to being around the Reds
a lot.
Yeah, on a regular basis. I mean, he'd been helping out and doing things in spring training and throughout the year with them, you know, traveling around. But here he's going to be there for 81 games. And I don't know. I just I would not be surprised, because I can't see how, you know, but short of the Reds making the playoffs, I can't see David Bell surviving. Although he's relatively cheap, maybe they'll, you know, be able to sign him again cheap, and that's the most important thing for the Reds.
That seemed to be the most important thing. And I want to voice something that you and Chris talked about it last week too, and that's my support for Chris Welsh. I got no problem with Barry Larkin, blah blah blah, unless it comes in the booth, unless it comes at the expense of Chris Welsh's time on in the booth. Yeah. And then I have a problem with it.
Yeah, he's the most professional broadcaster in there. I don't understand that.
And you and Chris talked about this a little bit last week, and I think Chris said it was, he walks that really fine line between educating and being entertaining. And it's not, I don't think that's an easy level to hit on a regular basis. And I think Chris hits it almost all the time.
Yeah, well, I just like that he's trying. You know, so few broadcasters will even try.
Yep.
So, back to David Bell, he said that Nick Senzel considered the Reds' everyday starting center fielder. What do you think about that?
I noticed that he didn't really talk about what that meant.
How do you mean that?
Well, what is an everyday center fielder for David Bell? Or what is an everyday position player for David Bell?
Well, there's where I was going to go, is that, I mean, an everyday player is an everyday player that play every day. But that is not, there's no chance in the world that David Bell is going to start Nick Senzel in center field, you know, 80-85% of the games. He doesn't do stuff like that.
The only everyday players on this team are Suarez and Votto.
No, Votto's not. I don't think Votto is. He wasn't last year.
Well, he got benched for 3 days.
Well,
to me, that doesn't keep you from being an everyday player. He's, you know, he played in 54 games last year. That tied him for second or third on the team. And maybe Castellanos is an everyday player on this team, I guess.
No. He won't start against certain pitchers. You know, that's the way he got mad about it last year. His defense is so bad, he's going to keep getting pulled out.
Well, I think if you get pulled out late for defense, that doesn't mean you're not an everyday player.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. But what about
the definition of that has changed over the years?
Yeah. Well, you know, Senzel will be pulled when, you know, there's a right-handed pitcher comes in on the bullpen, and you know, even though there's no reason to replace Nick Senzel defensively late in the game, they're going to end up stuck with, you know, Aristides Aquino playing center field in the eighth and ninth innings of a tie ball game.
Or Jesse Winker.
We've seen that. Hyperactive David Bell.
No, it's like little. We've talked about this. Yeah. I don't want to get off on the Bell.
Let's not. Yeah, it frustrates me.
He at times manages like it's Little League where everybody has to play.
Yeah, but let me. And I don't mind playing the advantage, playing the angle sometimes. But anyway, it's interesting that he did say though that he came out and said, you know, Nick Senzel's our starting center fielder. And And it's interesting for a couple reasons. Number one, that it's showing some support for Senzel, some belief in Senzel, but also that they're not going to do the smart thing and move Senzel to the infield, which is what I would do if I were running this team, since they don't have a shortstop.
Well, that's where I was just going to head. Is he really said that the way I read it was in response to the constant questions about shortstop in the infield. You know, they're still talking about Suarez playing shortstop.
And let me say this. That's another thing that Suarez said in his comments, is that he wanted to play some shortstop.
Yeah, in fact, Suarez is saying he wants to play shortstop. And if he could play shortstop, we're a much better team.
Yeah, I think I play him at shortstop. If I'm the Reds, I think I play him there. I mean, you're going to take a hit defensively, you know, whatever. But You got positioning and shifts and all that. You try to minimize as much as you can. But I put him at short. I put Moustakas at third. I put Senzel at second. And I think you got a pretty good lineup there.
But you don't have any gaping holes.
No, no. I mean,
you know, assuming, you know, that Senzel isn't a 186 hitter, you know.
Right, right. And he might be, yeah. Plus. But he can play second defensively. Third is Moustakas' natural position. So, you know, you're kind of strengthening your defense a little bit there. You know, moving Moustakas to his better position. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that second is a better defensive position for Senzel than center field. But you're definitely helping your offense when you've got him and Akiyama in the lineup at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I guess maybe if I've got Castellanos and Winker out on the corners, I probably would rather have Senzel than Akiyama out there just because Senzel can cover some ground. So,
yeah. But, you know. Well, and I, you know, I'm not a big believer in the defensive metrics, but Akiyama looked really good playing left field last year. And I don't remember him making as many good plays in center field as he did in left, but he seems to get a really good jump on the ball. He seems to see the ball really well. So I'm not ready to short him in center field just because he's not as fast as Nick Senzel.
Well, I think at his age, I think the chances he's going to be as good as Nick Senzel in center field are pretty slim based on what I saw. But he's a competent outfielder at all three positions and a good outfielder.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him for a whole season. I'm hoping that he was figuring it out. And he still finished with a .357 on-base percentage.
Yeah, after taking about 6 weeks at the beginning of the season to figure out the league a little bit. So, Definitely. All right, so that's, you know, again, there's not a whole lot of news. They're playing out there, and not really playing, but they're working out there in Arizona, and everybody has reported at this point, I believe. And so, yahoo, go Reds.
We're ready.
You ready to answer some viewer mail?
Always.
All right, let's begin. These questions, again, come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you, too, can support the podcast. And, you know, by joining the family there at patreon.com, you can get some priority for your viewer mail questions. You can join our Slack channel, which has been extremely active here as spring training has gotten back going, just talking about the Reds and commiserating over this team that, for some reason, we love so much. First question comes from Joe Farsing. Joe asks, who are you guys more optimistic about in camp than most and more pessimistic? Who are you more optimistic about in camp? I think you just said the guy I'm most optimistic about, and it's Shogo Akiyama. I mean, I think that guy can play.
I agree with you. And you and I have both saying since the moment they signed him, how excited we were to see him play. But if you're going to ask me who I'm most optimistic about, when you say it that way, I'm kind of like, who's going to be better than they were last year is the way I look at optimistic, yeah. Minus Suarez.
Who's who?
Suarez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There's no way that he's as bad a hitter as he looked last year.
Well, he came in after the shoulder injury last year, and so he really was not healthy, and there was a short season, and, you know, yeah, there's no way he's going to be as bad as he was last year. I don't know if he's going to hit 50 home runs, but there's no way he's going to be as bad.
But there's no way he's going to have a .312 on base percentage either.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Or an OPS plus of 102. He's a much better player than 2% above average.
Yeah. What, pessimistic? Who are you more pessimistic about in camp?
The shortstops.
The phantom shortstop.
Yeah, that dark group over there, they're all masked together. It's like a, you know, the thing is, you could put them all together, make a big smooshy pile out of them, and you still don't get a shortstop.
No. You know who I'm a little pessimistic about this year, and I hate to say this. I hate to say this publicly. Well, yeah, that, definitely, but Amir Garrett. Everybody's high on Amir, and I love Amir, and I love his antics on the field, and I like that he has fun out there. But, you know, he's going to be the closer, probably.
You think he will?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not convinced.
Who's it going to be? Lucas Sims?
Yep.
Nah, I don't see it. I just don't see it.
My problem, and I understand what you're saying about Garrett, because I really like him too, but you never know for sure what you're going to get out of him. I mean, that's closer. I mean, we said this is the same argument I had about Iglesias for years. But I think at least with Sims, you know what you're going to get pretty much every day.
Well, we think we know. We saw it in one shortened season.
Right. Yes, assuming he's the same pitcher he was last year, and we've all talked about how volatile relievers are and 1 year to the next. So who the hell knows? But
yeah, Garrett has just. I don't think there's any chance whatsoever. There's not. No, it's not true. There's some chance, but I don't think I'm pessimistic about the chances of him of Amir Garrett being better than Rezell Iglesias in 2021.
Well, as much as I complained about Iglesias last year and screamed and jumped up and down and have for a number of years, he was still pretty good last year.
Yeah, he was.
And we got nothing for him.
Yeah, we gave him away for free. Noe Ramirez, yahoo.
Ooh.
A warm body. Yeah, I just.
I heard they got a can of Dinty Moore stew with him too.
It was hearty. So I hate to say that about Amir because I do like the guy, but I don't like that he went to play basketball for St. John's because, you know, screw St. John's. But anyway, Andrew Scott Wills, who is your 2021 pick for breakout bat? 2021 pick for breakout bat.
This is based more on hope than anything else. And this will be the answer to a number of these questions. Nick Senzel. I think he is the key to how well this team does offensively in 2021.
Yeah, this is like the 16th straight season that I've said Nick Senzel in answer to this question. Yep. And I'm going to keep saying it until he's no longer
there. Later, hopefully we'll be right.
Right. It's like, soccer, America's sport of the future since 1973. Nick Senzel, Cincinnati's, breakout star since, 2000 and, I don't know, whatever, 17, seems like. Yeah, that's who I say, too. I guess the only other ones you could maybe put in there would be Tyler Stevenson, but I'm not expecting a ton from Tyler Stevenson. I'm expecting him to be a decent bat, better than we've seen from many catchers. These are rookies. Who's that?
You could probably throw Akiyama in there also.
Yeah. So, but I think it's Senzel. Chuck Nichols, Chad, Bill, how the heck are you? Why don't you answer that one first, Bill?
Peachy,
excellent. How many home runs will Gino and Joey hit this year? That's his first question. Then I got that's actually a second question after how the heck are you? Three questions for Chuck. That's too many, Chuck. Come on, man. His real question here is, though, how many home runs will Gino and Joey hit this year?
Give me your numbers, Chad. Tell me what you think.
I'm gonna say over under 55 between them.
Between the two of them?
Yeah.
I'll take 60 between the two of them.
So you'll take the over. What you got? 40 and 20? 35 and 25?
Yeah, somewhere around there, plus or minus 5, yeah.
Yeah, but Gino with more. Yeah. I hope Gino hits. Actually, I'm going to say 80. I think that I'm going to say 80. 50 for Gino, 30 for Joey. I choose to be optimistic.
Okay.
Chuck also asks, motorcycle season is upon us, or almost upon us, so are wild hogs, let me read this, are you wild hogs or easy rider type of guys?
I like both the movies.
Yeah, I've never seen Wild Hogs. I'm not going to watch that nonsense.
It's funny.
Easy
it's
Rider.
A fun movie.
Easy Rider. Get out of town with that nonsense. Funny movie.
You just liked it because they shot the hippie with the shotgun. That's why you liked Easy Rider.
Dang hippies. Joey Gaditza from Canada asks, hey, Chad and Bill, with the rotation being Gray, Castillo, Miley, who do you think locks down the fifth spot? I think those are the likely top four. So who's going to lock down the fifth? I started to go ahead and make a declaration, but I think it's probably 50-50 right now between TJ Antone and Michael Lorenzen. You think one of those guys has an edge?
Those are exactly the same two that I have. I think if Antone can get his walks down, I think he could be a stud. I mean, when he pitched well last year, he was really impressive.
Yeah, he's one of these Kyle Bodie spin rate guys.
And I think they're going to need Lorenzen in the bullpen.
Wow, they didn't give away two relievers for free or anything, did they?
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I think they may. I think what may end up happening is Antone goes to Louisville or to the bullpen to start, just because Lorenzen has been here and, you know, let's let him try it. I can see that happening. I don't mind Lorenzen. Yeah. I don't mind Lorenzen doing it. I mean, you know, whatever.
He gave him, what was it, two or three really good spot starts at the end of the year last year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think he'd be fine. But I'm with you. I think the Antone definitely has the higher upside, right?
Yep. And who was the guy that, and I think you and Doug, who was the guy, somebody that pitched really, really well in Puerto Rico or somewhere in winter, De Leon, I think?
Yeah, it was Jose De Leon, yeah, the opening day starter.
Whether that means anything or not is a whole different question.
Right. I mean, he's in the mix, but I don't know. I think he's solidly behind, this is my estimation, Lorenzen and Antone. Because he did not perform when he came over from the ketchup factory to the big leagues last year.
He did not.
Great mustache, though. Hooper Powell says, thanks for the recommendation of Nomadland on Hulu. I did recommend that movie, Nomadland. Fantastic movie, starring Francis McDormand. His question is this. If you had to live in a van with Mr. Lack, Mr. Linden, or Mr. Garber, who would you choose? Phew. I would choose.
I think the three of us would throw Chad out of the van.
You wouldn't have to throw me out. I would leap out on my own. I would live in a van down by the river alone before I would live with either any of those guys. Gosh. All right, Charles Zollers.
My wife would miss me if I was traveling around in a van with Chad and Chris and Jason and whoever. She would miss me.
My wife would be thrilled. Charles Zollers, man, he keeps bringing this up. His Central Florida, you know, he's hurt over the fact that they, you know, didn't lose a game one year, but they weren't national champs, and he wants them to be. Hey, Chad and Bill, last time I'll bring this up, but if the NCAA formally recognizes that you finished number one in a national poll, that's legit, right? Besides, what has Virginia done in the past 20 years of football? That's unnecessary. So anyway, he loves to talk about that, but his actual question is this. What's the better cereal, Wheaties or Vados? Do you remember Vados, Bill?
No, I do not. I'm a Cheerios guy, though.
You don't remember Vatos?
No, I do not remember Vatos.
I never had them, but I remember when they briefly came out. I think it was after his MVP season, right? Vatos.
Somebody's got some on their shelf, just like they used to have Billy Beer.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. You know, I don't eat breakfast cereal anymore, but Wheaties. I used to kind of like Wheaties back in the day, I guess, but. You know what the best breakfast cereal is? Grape Nuts.
I guess if you like Grape Nuts, you might think so.
I love grapes and I love nuts. Why wouldn't that be perfect?
Well, I like chocolate, but I don't eat Count Chocula.
I want this new
slider. Or chocolate Cheerios. Or
what about Frankenberry? You a little Frankenberry?
No. I'm a honey nut guy. Me and Omar.
Honey nut guy. Oh, disgusting. All right. Anyway, thanks for the question, Charles. John Majewski. Here's one that is going to appeal to you, Bill. In reading about Fred Norman, friend of the podcast, Fred Norman, who's one of my favorite players in Reds history, I came across the name of Enzo Hernandez, who was the starting shortstop for the San Diego Padres in 1971. As a 22-year-old rookie, Enzo made more errors, 33 in 143 games, than his combined number of extra base hits and RBIs. Grand total of 24, 9 doubles, 3 triples, and 12 RBIs, no homers. 618 plate appearances, so more errors than extra base hits and RBIs. The Enzo Hernandez story, you can see it now on Netflix, makes me feel so much better about the Reds. No matter how bad it gets, I'm confident that the Reds shortstops will have more RBIs and extra base hits than errors. What do you think? I'm not confident in that.
I think he committed suicide in 2013. I'm just looking him up.
Oh my gosh, Bill. We didn't have to take it in a dark direction.
I'm just reading about Enzo Hernandez here. Poor. Because I'd never heard of him.
Enzo's a good name. We got to give him that. That's a quality name. Yep. Enzo. I do not think that the Red shortstops, John, I know you say you're confident, but I don't think, I'm not confident they'll have more RBIs and plus extra base hits than errors. Not at all. I mean, you know, There's no evidence that Kyle Farmer can play shortstop at the big league level defensively. We know he can't hit.
We know he can't hit.
Yeah, and I see no evidence that he can actually play defensively. I'm the Kyle Farmer thing baffles me. I mean, he seems like a good guy, and he plays really hard when he's in the game. You know, probably a really good teammate.
And he can give you a couple innings, at, you know, in multiple positions, which is – there's value to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, that's his value. I don't understand how anyone can even pretend in the Reds organization that he can be a starting shortstop in the big leagues. It's just – it's – I mean, he's better than me. He's better than most people. He's a big leaguer. But come on, it's just crazy. So anyway. I'll give you an opportunity to wax on Fred Norman if you want here, because let's finish up with John Majewski. By the way, the Reds owe a lot to players like Enzo. Freddie Norman's win-loss record for the Padres suffered badly with that type of support, which allowed the Reds to get him for almost nothing. In 1973 with the Reds, Norman finished sixth in the Cy Young vote and became a key pitching cog for the Big Red Machine. Thanks, Enzo. You'd love you some Freddie Norman, huh?
I do. That was one of my favorite interviews when we had Freddie on here and got to spend some time talking to him. And one of the reasons the Reds got him for almost nothing was because the Padres were broke at the time. And the Reds were cash happy, and they got him. I think it was, Gene Locklear maybe. I'm operating on, and cash. And not within months after they traded and got Norman, Ray Kroc bought the Padres, and all of a sudden they had all that money they needed, and we probably couldn't have gotten Norman later, at least not as cheap. But he was 1-7 when he came to the Reds in 73, finished the year 13-13. And as we talked about on Building the Machine, when his first three games with the Reds, he threw a five-hit shutout against the Pirates, then he threw a three-hit shutout at Candlestick Park, then he went into L.A. and threw 8 2/3 shutout innings. Was one out from getting a third straight shutout when Ron Say hit a home run off of him in the bottom of the ninth, or he could have started with three straight shutout wins for the Reds. That's a lot better than Jack Billingham's start of going 0-6 when he came over to the Reds in 72.
Yeah, a little bit better. No question. No question. What you just described about the Padres and the Reds at the time of that trade sounds exactly like the Padres and Reds in 2021. You know, the Padres are cash-strapped and not willing to spend any money, and the Reds are flush with cash and trying to acquire players. It sounds exactly like what we're seeing this offseason, right?
It's the reverse zone. What do they call that in comic books? Where everything's backwards. I forget what that's called, but yeah.
Bizarro world? I don't know.
Bizarro world. Yep, that's what it is. We're living in the bizarro world now.
Yeah. Gosh. Good question.
Or the cheapo Castellini world. I can't figure out which one it is.
Oh, Bob Castellini. He's the bane of my existence. He's everything that's wrong with this organization. Have I mentioned that?
Not today.
I'm not going to talk about him anymore. Nathan Connor, remember how desperate Jim Bowden was to keep Pokey Reese during the Ken Griffey Jr. trade negotiations? Pokey Reese ended his career with a 67 WRC+. Kyle Farmer has a career 74 WRC+. The Reds have a no-glove Pokey Reese in line to start this year. Here's his question, though. When you look up and down that 2000 roster, that's the first year that Junior came over, and they won 85 games, I believe, that year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 85 and 77 under manager Jack McKeon. When you look up and down that 2000 roster, it's a miracle they won 85 games. Oh, there, he just said it. I didn't have to go look it up. I think the 2021 Reds are a better team. What say you? Talk about setting a low bar. And he says, putting it another way, how many players from the 2021 Reds would start over their 2000 counterpart? So let's look at that. Let's look at the 2000 lineup versus the 2021 lineup.
Team, at least offensively, that was not a bad team.
Well, let's go position to position, though. You're right. You got 35-year-old Benito Santiago at catcher. He was sharing time with 31-year-old Eddie Taubenzie.
Yeah, I would take our catchers this year over them.
I think so, too. I mean, look, Taubenzie had a 76 OPS plus and couldn't play much defense. Santiago was 79, and he had been a good defensive player, but he was aging at that time. I think I take Barnhart and Stevenson.
Yep.
First base, 25-year-old Sean Casey over Joey Votto.
I'd take the 25-year-old Sean Casey at this point.
I would, too. I mean, you know, gosh, he hit .315 that year, .385 on base, .517 slugging. 20 homers, 124 OPS plus. That's when I thought he was going to be a superstar.
Yep, I did too.
Yeah. Second base, Second base, it was actually Pokey Reese played more games at second base. So you got Pokey Reese versus Mike Moustakas.
Moustakas, I guess.
Yeah, I think Moustakas. So we got two out of three are the 2021 Reds. Shortstop Barry Larkin over. We're not even going to talk about that. 36-year-old Larkin, right?
Yeah.
He had 118 OPS plus.
Yep.
At age 36. Third base, Aaron Boone, 27-year-old Aaron Boone, versus current Reds third baseman Eugenio Suarez.
I'll take Suarez.
I think Suarez as well, yeah. So now three out of five go for 2021. Out of, you're right, not a bad lineup. So now your outfielders, left field, we'll say it's Dimitri Young, 26-year-old Dimitri Young. For the Reds, I guess let's say Winker.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, it's Winker and who? You know, because you know he's not going to play against left-handed hitters.
I don't know that. I think he hit in a small sample last year, and I think he'll get a chance at least early in the year.
I hope you're right.
I'm not convinced he will hit, but he did last year in a small sample size.
I think I'll take Winker over Dimitri Young.
I think I will, too. So now we're at four out of six for 2021. And maybe I'm just – well, I don't know. I've always been a Winker guy. Center field, Ken Griffey Jr. versus Senzel / Akiyama.
I'll go with Jr.
Really? Over Senzel? You just said he was a breakout star.
I said I hope he is.
Okay, so that's seven players, and we're 4-3 now, right, for the is that what we said?
Yep.
4-3 for the 2021 Reds. Right field, Dante Bichette, 36-year-old Dante Bichette happens. Versus Nick Castellanos.
I guess Castellanos. Bichette was at the end. He had 60.
He was actually better that year than I remembered.
Yeah, but I was going to say
roughly
that,
average.
A couple of weeks ago, last week or the week before, you were talking about how terrible he was, and he wasn't terrible.
Roughly average.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that starting lineup. For one thing, you got two Hall of Famers on that team.
Aaron Boone and Benito Santiago.
And you got six guys that are above average offensively. And then you got Steins, Tucker, and Alex Ochoa, who all had good years on the bench.
Plus the immortal Juan Castro.
The immortal Juan Castro. With his 61 OPS plus.
Career high.
Hal Morris was on that team.
Yeah, that's probably the last year, yeah.
So, I would assume so.
Gookie Dawkins, the immortal Kamara Barty. Oh,
Brooks Krinchicki.
Kieschnick.
Mark Lewis was on that team.
Yep. So
he had a minus 22 OPS plus. How do you even do that?
I didn't know it was possible.
Let's look at the pitching stats.
Yeah, the pitching's not even close.
No.
I think you take the 2020 Reds just about all the way. You know, maybe your fifth starter, Denny Nagel, you might take him.
The 2000 team had a really good bullpen.
Oh, they did have a great bullpen. That's what saved them, yeah. Yeah. Guys, yes, yeah.
I mean, when your best starter is Denny Nagel.
Steve Parris, Ron Valone, Rob Bell, Pete Harnish.
Yeah.
Wow. And all those guys, 30 years old or more, except for Rob Bell. Yeah, the bullpen. Danny Graves was really good that year. Elmer Descens pitched in relief that year. He did get 16 starts, so pitched another 24 games in relief. Scott Williamson was good again. Scott Sullivan, he was always good. And Dennis Reyes. You remember what Dennis Reyes' nickname was?
No.
Best nickname in Reds history. Big Sweat.
He was only 23 at the time. They had two pitchers 23 years old at the time.
Yeah.
That's when we used to bring guys up when they were young.
I don't believe that. So, I don't know. You got to kind of look at this team that won 85 games. And, the league's different and who knows. But I can't see that the 2021 team is worse.
Look at way down at the bottom of the pitching at number 20.
Let me go back down there. Number 20. Oh, wow.
I only threw three innings, but Norm Charlton was on that team.
Nasty boy Norm Charlton, 37 years old.
three innings, gave up six hits, nine runs, walked six guys, and only struck out one.
Nine earned runs in three innings. Yikes.
Wow.
Okay, we're going to win at least 85 games, I think is what we've decided here.
I think that's what Connor's trying to tell us.
I think so. Good question. Kyle Kapler asks us now, betting big on Jose Garcia to be the guy at short, probably next year and beyond. What's the plan if he struggles in the minors this year? What's the plan, Bill?
I think the plan is probably the same plan they have this year. We'll just go with whatever we can find laying around.
Yeah, there's no plan, essentially.
The only plan is that there is no plan.
Yeah. Gosh, this team. Oh, Mike Mannix. Should I name my fantasy baseball team Short-Stopped or Stopped Short? Either way, my avatar is Kyle Farmer's head on a cartoon farmer body. I love it.
Well, if that's his avatar, then I think his name should be Farmhand.
Farmhand?
Yeah.
No, I'm going with Stopped Short. I like Stopped Short.
Okay.
That's where you get the cows, you know. You got to go out on the farm. Go to those cow farmers. That's where you get a cow and farmer and cow holder. Mike Perry, with the ball reportedly being deadened this year, what sort of offensive production can we expect from the Reds, who were so reliant on the home run in 2020? This is a great question, and it goes back to something we started to talk about earlier. There are reports that the MLB has deadened the ball this year. I guess they think that's going to make the game more exciting. How big a problem is that for the Reds? Because every run scored, I think literally every single run last year scored on a home run. I'll have to look that up, but I think it's literally true.
No, I think there was one that scored on a pass ball.
Okay, maybe. But
do you really believe that they're deadening the baseball?
Yes.
Okay.
Baseball's got to know that they've ruined the game. I mean, you know, aesthetically, just to watch the game, they've ruined it. So yeah, I think that.
So you think deadening you think it'll have the intended effect?
It never has the intended effect, right? Who knows what the unintended effects are going to be? I can't see that it helps the Reds. I do think that if it is in fact deadened, I think that's a pretty good indication that Eugenio Suarez is not going to get his 50 home runs like he wants to get. So. I don't know. Do those home runs turn into doubles and we still score runs? It's a question that I'm afraid I don't know how to answer, because we just got to wait and see if it's actually dead and how that impacts on the field. We do have a lot of guys that are dependent on the long ball. Any other thoughts about that, Bill?
No.
Good.
I just don't know. I question whether the ball will be deadened. I'm not convinced that baseball is against the three result game.
Three true outcomes, yeah.
Yeah, it's three true outcome, whatever you want to call it. And if they deaden the ball, does that just turn fly balls into outs? What is it? I don't really know what deadened means. Well, I guess we'll just have to see.
I agree. I don't think the problem is necessarily too many home runs. I think the problem is the ball's not being put into play enough.
Yes.
And so deadening the ball is not going to help hitters make contact any more often. So maybe it's
I think widening the strike zone would help.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. You fool with the mound. I don't know. There are things you can do, I guess. I'm not sure that deadening the ball changes. The more I'm thinking about it here, that it changes. It doesn't address the issues with the three true outcomes.
I can't remember. I know it had an effect in '69 when they lowered the mound, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this in building the machine, because the pitchers dominated so dramatically in '68 that they changed it in '69. And there was an effect, but I don't remember it being a dramatic effect. Do you?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a I don't know if dramatic's the right word, but it was significant. It was noticeable if you go look at the league wide stats.
Well, you didn't have you didn't have, what was it, 8-10 pitchers that had ERAs under 2.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Bob Gibson went back to being, you know, just immortal instead of, you know, superstar of all time. Yeah.
Luis Tiant was under two that year, I remember.
Luis Tiant.
For the Indians.
Anyway, good question, Mike Perry. Thank you so much. Here comes the next one from Jeff Euchler. We're getting to the end here, so let's power through these last two or three. Jeff Euchler asks at patreon.com/redlegradio, we've all complained about the banal remarks by Reds front office types trying to spin the shortstop situation, etc. And he's talking about, oh, we like who we got there, you know, we feel really good about this group, and nonsense. Does the recent kerfuffle with Kevin Mather in Seattle make you a little more appreciative of bland remarks by the front office types? And if you haven't heard what happened with Mather in Seattle, go. I'm not going to dive too far into it, except I'll say this. My answer to your question, Jeff, is no. Because what Mather did, he told the truth about what they really believe in that front office. At least some people believe in that front office. And I would very much prefer to have truth from the Reds front office. And hopefully it's not as ridiculous as what Mather said, but it very well might be. I don't think that he's the only guy in a big league front office that, you know, that thinks that way about how to, you know, how to deal with players. And just go read his comments if you want to. But no, I'd rather have the Reds front office tell me the truth for once. And I know they can't do that for PR reasons, but they lie to me and, you know, act like I'm supposed to believe what they're saying. So I don't know if you got any comment on that, Bill. I'll give you a chance if you do.
Well, mine is, you know, I've been involved in politics in my area for a while, and you can be honest without being insulting.
But man, we really like these shortstops we've got. They got a lot of positive, you know, Kyle Farmer, you know, we saw some good things out of him last year, and Kyle Holder, I mean, you know, he hits from the you know, one side of the plate. And
what was the quote that you and Chris were laughing about last week? They've got a lot of, I forget what it was, but it was just so generic.
Yeah, we got a lot of guys or something, you know.
Yeah, it was something along that line.
Yeah. So, yeah, just, yeah, don't, what do they say about don't do something and tell me it's raining? That's, you know, that's all I'm asking.
And the Reds have filled up our boots.
They have filled up our boots. Rich Thompson, gentlemen, as part of your eye squinting, what do you think is the most important thing to happen for the Reds to make the playoffs this year? Four options here. Most important thing to happen for the Reds to make the playoffs. A, Nixon Zales to stay healthy and have a productive season. B, Gino and Joey hit 260 or higher with 30 homers, 90 RBIs each. C, the top three starters win at least 15 games each. And D, the Cubs and Brewers have a similar scandal that the Mariners are dealing with, and the players decide to play lackluster baseball because management has teed them off. What do you think?
Senzel by a nose over the Gino and Joey answer.
Okay. To me, I'm going to drop D off, you know, because that's kind of funny, yeah. But the top three are the ones we're talking about. I think actually of the top, those three, Senzel, Gino and Joey, and top three stars win at least 15 games. I think actually Gino and Joey's third on my list because,
really?
Well, hit 260 or higher with 30 home runs. I mean, that doesn't really tell me how productive they've been.
I don't care about the 260 or higher, but the 30 home runs and the 90 RBIs means that the team's scoring some runs.
Okay, yeah, maybe. That's why I would say the most important thing is if the top three starters win at least 15 games each, again, that's not a way to judge the quality of those pitchers, but it means the Reds are winning games. And so I think if that happens...
That's a good point, too, yeah. And they're scoring early and often if their starters are winning 15 games each.
Right. But not, I think that you're right about the fact about Senzel. I mean, if Senzel can finally be that Senzel that we've been waiting for, what an added dimension this adds to this offense. I mean, this offense was not good last year. Now, I do expect they're going to be somewhat better just because they're going to start playing closer to the back of their baseball cards. I think that's inevitable. I think it has to happen somewhat. But the Reds did not go out and improve this offense at all. They didn't go acquire anybody that's going to help this offense. But if they got a guy in-house who can, you know, be an above average hitter that they didn't have last year, I think that's huge. I think everything, it really is big. And so, yeah, I think you're not wrong about Nick Senzel.
If you are going to pick either Senzel or Suarez, well, no, that's not, never mind. It's not a fair comparison because Suarez has done it at the big league level and Senzel hasn't.
That's true.
I think the odds are higher that Suarez turns back into the player that he has been in the past, more so than Senzel becomes the player we believed he would become. But that's kind of a duh statement.
Yeah, if I got to go on DraftKings and put a prop bet on that one, yeah, I'll put it on Suarez one, yeah, definitely. But I think there's a non-zero chance that Senzel is finally going to get it, but I've been saying it. So until he does it, you know, I'm just kind of repeating myself. All right, last question comes from our friend Risto Neely, as usual, getting in under the wire here. Good evening, Professor Dotson and Mr. Lack. I was listening to Jeff Carr this morning. Jeff's the host of the Locked On Reds podcast, and the discussion centered on what to do with the Reds' cheapskate owner. The idea that his guest proposed was to go to a fan-owned team or a combination of fan ownership and the current ownership group. The idea was similar to the way the Green Bay Packers have been owned by a stock offering to the fans. There are many thoughts that could be incorporated into this plan, but it would be one way to raise the needed capital to make the team competitive. The decisions what to do with the monies raised could be decided by proxy vote, by share, elected board, or by another method decided by shareholders. What are your ideas regarding this type of plan? Bill, any thoughts?
I think it's a pie in the sky idea that isn't realistic. I mean, what does a Major League Baseball team sell for these days?
More than $1 billion.
Yeah. You aren't going to do that with a GoFundMe page, you know?
Yeah. How many? And not just that to buy the team, but the ongoing funding of, you know, purchasing players, you know, right, running the team.
Buying the team isn't the end of your financial support.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and everybody loves bringing up the idea of the way the Packers are done, but I don't know when the Packers originally became, or if they've always been owned by the city and the people of Green Bay and, you know, their fans, blah, blah. But it wasn't when the Packers were worth however many million billions that they are now. That's not when it happened. So it's a great, you know, what we need to do is we need to have one of our people, you know, invent the next thing so that they become a multi billionaire and then they buy the Reds.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
That's exactly what we need. We need that's the way to fix the Reds ownership problem. So we've got to get rid of Bob Castellini. I'm suggesting Jeff Bezos or
he's got a dollar or two.
Yeah, let him come in. I heard a rumor that he was looking to buy an NFL team here.
Yeah, I read that.
And
maybe we could convince him baseball's a better option.
Yeah. Or let's get Mark Cuban, somebody like that in that cares about, you know, putting a good product on the court. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're looking at, though, at who should buy the team from Castellini, the answer is anyone other than Bob Castellini. Here's a question I got on Twitter the other day, maybe last night, Bill. Is Castellini worse than Carl Lindner as a team owner?
No,
I don't think it's close, actually. And Castellini's garbage. He's at least pretended to try to win a couple times. Yeah, that's what I said on Twitter was that's your last quarter century of Reds baseball. Two owners that are just, they don't care. Yeah, Castellini's got to go. He's absolutely got to go. He is the only thing standing between this team and being good. And I'm telling you, this team will never be good again. I hate to say this, but they'll never be good again while the Castellinis are running the organization, especially now that Phil Castellini's moved over into baseball ops. Oh, my gosh.
And two things. One is I will say this about the Castellini organization. And the ballpark experience is better than it ever has been.
True. Absolutely.
But that's not why people go to the ballpark. They go to the ballpark to watch the ball. Well, I won't say everybody, but to watch the ball game and to see the team win. The other thing is with this 30%, is it 30%? The line approved. Which means they're not going to make the kind of money they're used to making again this year. So, again, they won't they'll go into next offseason saying they can't spend any money either. So, we've just given them another free year for not doing anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they could, but they're going. They got you giving them an excuse. I mean,
yep.
The Castellini ownership group has to go. Period. I mean, I don't want to dwell on it because there are things to be optimistic about and excited about. I think we've done a good job highlighting some of those in this episode because there are. You know, this is a kind of a fun team. That's what's so frustrating with them just quitting on us this offseason, as I said, is that I like a lot of the guys on this team.
Yeah. You know,
and they could be okay.
But they did nothing, zero, to make this team better in the offseason. This team is markedly worse than it was last year.
Yeah. You got the Suarez's and the Vados and the, you know, these players that are fun to watch, and then ownership just refused to support them, basically. Sorry, guys. It's frustrating, but I'm probably going to watch every game, though, Bill.
And here we are.
Exactly.
About every week.
Exactly. All right, this is episode number 363 of Red Leg Nation Radio. Thank you for tuning in. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Tell friends about us. You know, first of all, go leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes. If we see a funny one on there, we'll read it out here on the podcast. And tell your friends. Season's getting gone. We're back in the swing of things, and there are going to be some fun things to talk about this year. It's not going to be one of these 90 lost years, I don't think. So we're going to have some fun stuff to talk about, and who knows? Maybe the Reds will catch a little bit of fire. Bill, any final thoughts for us?
Nope.
All right. Well, appreciate you being here, and it's always fun talking to you. For Bill Lack and anyone other than Bob Castellini, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.